We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus, our morning talk show. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you here. And also, we're happy to have back on the program once again, Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with Extension, U of I Extension, Champaign County. Once a month, she is here on a Tuesday, and we talk about things that grow in the home landscape. So if you have a problem, this is the opportunity for you to call in and get some expert advice. And we can talk about trees and shrubs, lawn, things that are decorative, things that you can eat. We can talk about houseplants, any and all of that. If you've got a problem, you know, call in and give us the best description, and Sandy will see if she can help you out. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. We have a toll-free line that is good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. And if you would like to send in your question by email, you can do that too. We're at will-talk at illinois.edu. So any point here, whichever way you want to do it, you can get your question. Thanks very much for being here.
Good morning.
Well, it's been a little rough. It's been a little rough the last month or so. We've had the, here in Champaign-Urbana, I hope I got this right now, we've had the second warmest July on record, and we're way down on precip, way down over the average. I thought I had it written down here somewhere. Oh, yeah, it's like we've had a little over 1.5 inches. The average is 4.7, so we're like more than 3 inches down on the month. And everything in my, I don't know about your place, everything at my place, it just looks terrible.
Yeah.
Stuff looks terrible.
Well, especially lawns. I think people may have noticed that lawns have really taken a hit. And it is, it, you know, it is one of those things that, you know, our cool season grasses like Kentucky bluegrass and fescues and stuff, you know, they're meant to go dormant during the hot, dry weather. But it can get so dry and so hot for so long that people may notice that once, hopefully, we start cooling off and getting a little bit more moisture, they may find that those certain areas that were full sun all the time may not actually come back for them. So the good news is you can go ahead, and we're getting into the time period now where you could overseed or reseed those areas. So we're hoping we start getting into a little bit better weather when it comes to gardening, and then maybe people can evaluate that and then do some, still do some seeding this year to sort of thicken up their lawns.
Yeah, I'm concerned about some. I have tried to water some things that I thought really needed it, and other things I just said, well, you know, good luck and right when you get work. And there are a few perennials here and there I kind of wonder about. They're really looking terrible. I'm just hoping that they will make it and turn around. And at least next year, you know, they'll come back and things will be okay.
You know, most of the perennial, unless it's a new perennial, something you'd planted this year, or you may find those would be the ones that might not come back if they haven't had any kind of moisture over the last month or so. But most of the perennials, unless it's ferns or something that tends to be pretty delicate when it comes to hot weather, a lot of them have the ability to sort of hang out for long periods of time in dry weather. The top part might not look all that great and stuff, but a lot of them. So I wouldn't give up on stuff. Yet.
Okay.
Yet.
Yet. Very good.
I'm so optimistic.
That's the important qualification. We have a caller here in Milford. Let's talk with them. Line number 4 on the toll-free line. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Hey, thank you for having me online. We love your program here in Milford, Illinois.
So you got a question for Sandy?
Yes, I do. You know, I've been using one of those, I believe it's a Ross root feeder. It's one of those long metal poles at the end you can hook your hose up to. And I was wondering, I've been using it to water deep into some of the bald trees and evergreens we had put in. Is there too much water I can be giving? Or how often should I be watering my 20 evergreens and trees with this root feeder?
So how old are these? Are these been in there a while? I'm not sure.
Well, when we had them put in, they were about 8 foot tall. So now they're maybe 9.5 feet.
So they were planted last year, the year before?
They were planted 2 years ago. And some of the soil that they're in has a clay in it also.
I
just didn't know, can I be watering them too much? The last time I watered all of them was probably a month ago, but I watered them heavy each.
Right. Well, really for young trees like that, and they've been in a year or so, but they're still considered young trees and not completely established at this point. I would say probably more like once a week, to be honest with you. And then you certainly can't, there's certainly always possibility that you can overwater things. Probably not so much when we're not getting any rain like this. And unfortunately, it's one of those, watering is one of those things that's really kind of tough because, as you said, it kind of depends on the soil. Clay soil tends to stay, you know, wetter longer, but it also is harder to moisten. You know, once it gets really dry, it tends to sort of, the water rolls off and doesn't penetrate as well. So it's good that you're doing this, so the deep watering.
When I have that in the ground, and if I have my faucet on halfway or a quarter of the way or whatever from the house, how many minutes? I mean, is there too much? I mean, should I be doing like 5 minutes each hole? Because I have four holes going around all the balls, and that I try to go into the same hole each time. 5 minutes a hole or a little longer?
I think what I would probably do is really your best bet is to actually, you know, look at the soil after you've watered. Generally, what we're looking for is we try to moisten at least the top 8 inches or so of soil. And I really would encourage you to actually move the, don't use the same hole all the time. Because you actually can, if you keep watering in that same hole, it'll end up being an air pocket. And that doesn't help matters any. And plus, you don't always know that that's right where the roots are. So if you move it around, you're not going to hopefully have those air pockets. And then hopefully you're going to get to the roots where the plant actually is. Because they're never, you know, exactly symmetrical when it comes to roots.
Right.
So I definitely would move it around. And then your best bet is that after you leave it on for a little while, then just, you know, pull back the mulch or whatever and then sort of look and see if it's moist on top. If it's not, then, you know, maybe you need to move it around more or, you know, leave it on for a little bit longer. Watering is a tough thing in that it's sometimes you just, there isn't one perfect recipe, unfortunately, because there's so many variables. So you have to get used to your own soil and it depends on, of course, on how, you know, how much water pressure you have. And I would always encourage really low water pressure on those root feeders. Just really make it low.
Okay. I think I might have been having a little too high, so I think I'll back off on the pressure.
Yep. You don't want to make those air pockets. If you have it really high water pressure, you're going to make air pockets, and that's not what you're trying to do.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right.
Good
very luck. Good. Thank you. We have some other folks here, and we'll go next to Downs. This is line number one. Hello.
Hi. I have a strange phenomenon that I don't know that I can't find anyone else who has this. On coneflowers and rudbeckia and occasionally on Shasta daisies, and you're seeing a pattern here with the kind of stems these all have.
Mm-hmm.
On the flower, I will have just a fine flowering plant, and then I will go out and I will find that one or two or three of the flowers, the stem about 3 or 4 inches down from the flower looks like someone has taken a small scissors and snipped 3/4 away through the stem, and then the flower has just flopped. But it's still attached with that, you know, part of the stem that's left.
I've never heard of that before.
Nobody's ever heard of it.
Aren't you lucky?
I'm a McLean County Master Gardener, and nobody in our group that I've talked to has ever heard of it before. And I've had it for a couple of years. This year seems worse.
And have you tried just even, I guess what I would want, you know, typically if it was rabbits, you know, they would cut all the way through.
Tall. I mean, this is,
this is way up high.
Yeah, a 2.5-3 foot coneflower up at the top.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a, it's not something like a deer or, you know, because they would just chomp through the holes. You know?
Right, right. And have you sort of dug down around the maybe the base of the plant and stuff to see if you've seen any caterpillars or anything?
No, but
I mean, that would be one thing that I would think of. You know, certainly there's some caterpillars that could actually chew partly through things. It probably wouldn't be this sort of perfect. It sounds like it's almost this perfect cut.
It does.
Which you probably wouldn't
like
see.
Somebody's taken a little scissors and just snipped it until the weight of the flower flops it over and then leaves it there. Hanging.
Got any neighbors that are trying to get your plants or something, and you catch them at the wrong time, and they don't get it all the way cut? I'm not sure about that. That would be one of those things to do. Or Phil Nixon. I don't know if Phil Nixon's going to be on anytime soon. That might be a really good question.
About him.
And that might actually be good. Also, a good question for the TV program that's on Thursday nights, The Mid-American Gardener. You might just add, because I think it's going to be one of those things where you just may have to just keep asking. But I'll ask around, too, if anybody else has heard that. But it almost has to be something that has some sort of chewing mouth parts or something that's sort of chewing through it. But I'm not sure what that is. So I think I would definitely sort of investigate, you know, farther down into the plants to see if there's something that's coming out at night, and then sort of when it's hot during the day, then they sort of hang out through the base of the plant.
Yeah, it must be happening at night.
Yeah. So I would, yeah.
I don't see any kind of, well, I'm sorry, Japanese beetles are everywhere, but, you know, in general, I don't see insects.
Yeah, and I wouldn't see, and they usually don't go for the stems. They like all the succulent other stuff. Typically.
Right.
So I would check the plant, really look through the plant and see if there isn't something that's hiding out that then comes out at night.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good one.
I just don't know what the...
You'll have to let us know if you ever figure it out.
I will.
Maybe you need a camera at night, one of those...
Oh, yeah.
Infrared
cameras. You can figure out what's going on.
Well, like I have money for that.
Yeah, well, you know. Hey, it's a plant.
Going to a Japanese maple or something.
Okay. Well, good luck. I'm sorry I don't have any more insight on that.
Okay, thank you.
Right, thank you. I think, Harriet and I were just talking about having Phil come back sometime maybe in the next couple of weeks. I don't know. That will help this particular listener, but for people who occasionally know that we have Phil on the show to talk about insect pest issues, will be here. Well, I'm hoping sometime in the next couple of weeks. It does sound like it would have to be some insect or insect-related, caterpillar, something like that.
Yeah. Once we start ruling out all the other stuff. And there are certainly plenty of things that are smart enough to, you know, get out of the heat during the day. You know, they sort of do their thing at night. So that's one thing. I just can't think of what else it would be.
Okay.
So,
well, other questions are welcome. Sandy Mason is our guest this morning. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And once a month on a Tuesday, she is here. And we take your questions on things that grow in the home landscape, lawn, garden care, also houseplants. That's fine, too. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Email will-talk, or say hyphen. It's a hyphen. will-talk@illinois.edu. Okay, let's talk with somebody in Champaign. Line two. Hello.
Yeah.
Hi.
I bet it's rabbits. They operate like beavers. They cut off low, and if what falls is attractive, they will eat. If they don't, this time of the year they have enough vegetation elsewhere, they are very selective. So if they fall something like a purple coneflower, it's fairly woody. And not so attractive, so they cut it off, and they don't always cut it right off. It'll drop, and they do it at night, and they can devastate your prairie garden.
Well, maybe they're standing on their back legs, and because the way she talked, it was awfully high. Yeah, so maybe that's what they're doing.
Okay, well,
so
tall rabbits.
comment.
Yes.
At this time of the year, when it's hot, it reminds us that you can have native plantings that don't have to be watered, don't have to be tended, and they don't have to be mown. So we need policies and procedures coming out of the master gardeners or the master naturalists to encourage low mow. And that goes to rain gardens, goes to cities, it goes to mowing out your towns along the railroad lines where there's good native stuff. I'm getting very sick of the amount of mowing, the cost of the mowing, and the cost of the energy involved, labor, and everything else. I think we need to have policies that encourage people to be sustainable. And that's all around us. You can go out in the middle of the boondocks, and there's mowing forever. And you can see a state policy where the grass is growing on the edge of the road, but the cornfield behind is being mown like a billiard table. Then there are a few other things I'd like to say something about. I think the teasel crew is in town or somewhere around. There's a state teasel crew, and I haven't caught up with it yet, but they do not know what prairie looks like, and they go out and blanket spray not only on the roadside, but they go into people's property that has teasel on it, and that's not the way to conserve our vegetation. I don't know where they are at the moment, but they've just been up north of Rantoul, all over. Good prairie. So the herbicide is indicated by the shrivel up of sophiums and other prairie plants. So if you're growing native stuff, it won't be easy, but it is very sustainable.
Okay.
You might have a comment on that.
I appreciate the comment. And actually, one of the things I was thinking about when I was thinking about how hot and dry it's been, particularly over the last month, and if this is the beginning of some kind of a pattern, I do really wonder whether more and more in the home landscape we're going to have to be thinking more and more about drought tolerance as being an important feature of whatever it is we think we're going to want to plant.
And actually, as you look at especially things like prairie plants, the fact that we don't realize just how deep their roots are. I mean, they have amazing roots, like things like prairie dock and compass plant and stuff. They may have roots that go 13 feet deep, and that just seems amazing for a perennial. But they're really set up to tolerate these long periods of dry weather and heat and all that kind of stuff. And so it is one of those things that we do have to think about. But it is also interesting to think. I was just up in northern Illinois and northeastern Iowa. They've had too much rain. So you really kind of wonder, if this is a pattern, or next year we'll be the ones that have too much rain. And we've certainly have seen that over years.
Yeah,
so we need to have tough plants that are going to tolerate both, I think.
If we'd had the kind of rains
both
they had
extremes.
In Chicago, we'd be really complaining about being washed, practically being washed away.
Right, absolutely. I was just in the Galena area, and they had big issues with flooding through that area.
Okay. Well, again, I want to thank the caller for the comments. We have a couple of other people here. Here I got one for you. Someone wrote in by email, squirrels are eating all of my tomatoes. I have put out other food and water for them, but they ignore it. Do you have any suggestions?
Wow.
Yeah, 22 works pretty good.
You said that. Make sure that everybody knows you're the one that said that.
Unfortunately, I think it's like, we've talked about this
squirrels
before.
Squirrels are hard.
You pretty much, if you got a big squirrel issues, you can build a really big cage.
And unfortunately, that is one of the things, because they jump. They're not like rabbits, where at least you could put up, a sizable fence and have pretty good success with it. But they're going to jump, and they're going to climb, and they're going to do whatever they want to do for the most part. So your best bet is caging of some kind and chicken wire. And you don't have to do anything all that terribly in depth, but just sort of that temporary. And unfortunately, once they get in the habit, it's kind of hard to break.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry I don't have a whole lot of really good answers.
Putting out
that.
Other stuff for them will not help.
No.
That will only encourage them.
It just rounds out their diet.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
They have
so again, I think that's about, the best that.
I wish there was a good answer.
You really have to physically put a physical barrier up.
There are some repellents, and people tell me that they have had good luck with things like blood meal or human hair. But, if animals are hungry enough, the population's high enough, things are what they really want, they're going to go through the repellents, unfortunately. So I wish I had a good answer for that one, too.
Well, back to the phones here. Urbana, next, line 3. Hello.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
I was wondering if you have any advice for getting rid of some bamboo plants that have taken over a corner of my backyard where I'd like to plant a garden. I know I can cut the stalks off at the ground, but I think I've heard that that doesn't really get them.
Yeah, the rhizomes are still down there, unfortunately. So, I think it's probably going to be, any of the things that we might consider for a plant that we're trying to get rid of. I don't know how well. Is this an area you actually could put, like, black plastic or something like that and try to smother them out for a period of time? Or are you wanting to do something right away with that spot?
No, I could probably do that.
Because as hot as it is right now, that might help to some extent to put black plastic and just leave it there. And it's been hot enough and let that area really, really bake. It's probably not going to totally get rid of them, but it's certainly going to slow them down at that point. So you may try that. And then that might be at least enough that you could actually dig it out at that point. I know it's not going to be easy. And then if all else fails, there's certainly some herbicides that you could go ahead and use as well. Some of the non-selective herbicides like Roundup and Cleanup and all those good things. So unfortunately, there really isn't a good solution.
Okay.
But I think your best bet is probably to do a number of things. I would try the black plastic now. Just cover, you know, cut stuff off, cover it, and just leave it and let that soil bake for a while. And that will certainly reduce, you know, the food reserves that the plant has, but it probably won't get rid of them.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Well, thanks. And that, people who are going to try that, that does take a while.
It does.
You can't just put the plastic down for a week and then think it's going to do it.
So it would have been good, you know, had somebody put it down like a month ago with this really, really hot, dry weather. That probably would have baked most things enough that you really could have had some pretty good success with it. But I'm sure we're not done with the hot weather.
No, probably not. All right. We will continue and talk next with someone in Champaign and line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, hi.
I enjoy your show, and I have a couple questions. Basically, where do tomato worms come from, and what can I do short of chemicals to get rid of?
Yeah, tomato. Yeah, they're actually, the adult's a sphinx moth. And it's a big moth. That's actually quite beautiful. They're a big moth, and you'll see them. They have a very long proboscis, and you'll see them at dusk flying around things like petunias and stuff, and they'll feed on them, nectar feeders, and they'll feed on petunias and a lot of tubular kinds of flowers. So they're really pretty. So if you see this big thing sort of flying around at dusk, it almost looks like a hummingbird, but those are the sphinx moths. And they're the ones that, of course, are going to be laying the eggs and then produce these tomato worms. Tomato hornworms or tobacco hornworms. There's actually a couple different species, but they do the same thing. They chew. And unfortunately, it really is one of those things that you often don't notice they're there until you go out and there's nothing but sticks left of your tomatoes. The good news, one of the products, the BT products, and they're sold as Caterpillar Attack and a lot of other things. They're very specific for caterpillars, and so they're really, really darn effective when it comes to hornworms. Or you can pick them off as you see them. I know that's kind of gross, but you can use tongs.
That's what I do.
Yeah, you pick them off, and sometimes that's the easiest thing. But BT products, you know, they're sold as a lot of different things, but they're very specific for caterpillars, and so it's really safe for non-target insects, those kinds of things. And so it really does... really is quite effective. But they have to ingest it. You'd want to put it on as they're, you know, when the caterpillars are young. So it may be one of those things where if you're having a regular problem, you may just find that you need to do some BT applications fairly early.
No, it's not. It isn't that big a problem. I don't mind picking them off. It's just that they can do a lot of damage all at once.
Very quickly. Absolutely. Yeah. Very quickly. And if you ever see any of the hornworms that have those little, they look like rice stuck to their backs. Have you ever seen that before?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, those you want to leave, believe it or not, because that's actually a parasitic wasp. And it actually, you know, it's really cool, actually. The little baby wasps, the little maggot-like guys, have actually been eating inside the caterpillar. So that caterpillar is doomed anyway. And so all those little things are where the wasp is actually pupating. That's a little pupa for the wasp. And then the new wasp will come out. And then, so it's a beneficial control for hornworms. So you want to leave those guys that have the little rice bag-looking things on them.
Yeah, sure will.
The caterpillar's doomed anyway, so...
Yeah, well, especially if I get old of it. If he has lost, I'll be
But leave the ones that have the rice bags.
Exactly. I will.
All right.
Okay,
thank you.
Good luck.
Thanks for the call. Let's keep going here. We'll talk with someone next in Urbana. Line number two. Hello.
Hello, Sandy.
Hi.
I've got a peony question. I have some peonies that are growing in what's become rather dense shade, and mm-hmm. they're not doing well. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking of moving them. Is it late enough to move, or should I wait some more?
Yeah, usually we say about the 1st of September, because you kind of want to wait until we've gotten through the really hot part of the year, I think. So if you could wait a little bit, I think what I might do, if you haven't had a chance to water, we don't start getting in some rain, you may over the next week or so just, you know, kind of water that area so you're not having to dig through the hard concrete that is our soil sometimes when it's been this dry.
The perspective area, there where I'm planning to move them.
That area as well as the peonies themselves, just so when you dig them up. Because if you've ever, I don't know if they've been there for very long, they could have some major root systems if the peony's been there for a while.
They've been there longer than I've been here, so
there 16, you go.
17 years.
Yeah. So that's well worth watering it, just so when you dig it up, you're going to have a much better success of not breaking off all the little...
Okay, that's what I shall do.
Yeah. Yep.
And,
okay.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
Very good. Thank you. Well, here's somebody else who has a question for you that came in by email. Wants to know, could you recommend a nice low or medium light houseplant that is not harmful for cats? Because she says my cat loves to nibble on anything green.
There actually is a fairly nice website, and I'm trying to think of who has it. Might just go to the University of Illinois, their VetMed website. And there should be a link about poisonous plants. And so I would always, always, always check. The ones I probably, I think I would probably think of someone that I would be concerned about. To be honest with you, and this is low light, right?
Low or medium light.
Yeah. I don't think there's a problem, and I'd have to check. I don't know about that one. I was just thinking of peace lilies, but I'm not sure if that's... if those are poisonous or not. They're in that family that might be an issue. So I'm thinking it would be one of those things we'd really want to check first before I just say it off the top of my head. But I would check with the U of I VetMed website, and just they have some nice lists of poisonous plants, and then you can kind of go from there to see which ones. And if they can't figure it out, then they certainly can give me a call or email me at slmason@illinois.edu.
Okay. Well, we will go on here. Let's see. We'll talk next with somebody in Champaign County, line number one. Hello.
Hi. You've been talking about transplanting. I just wanted some general remarks on fall transplanting, and I think I have three hardy things that I'm attempting to transplant this fall, but I'm kind of curious about timing. Rosa Sharon, yews, and an ivy vine. They need a certain amount of fall time to acclimate, to root. Right?
Yeah, generally it's best. Actually, September is a great month to be moving things around, to be honest with you. It's really a good month because generally we're starting to finally, maybe, hopefully, still have some rain. We're getting into cooler temperatures. It gives them plenty of time to go ahead and hopefully put out a few new roots before winter comes. On some trees and shrubs, I've done it, you know, really late. But I think you're better off to go ahead and try and do it through the month of September. And even into the month of October, we usually have pretty good success. But I think September is a really great month to do that.
I engaged with you once about root pruning, and I've done a little bit on some of the plants that I intend to move.
That helps immensely.
Yeah. And that's, again, to acclimate. And get some new vine roots growing.
Right, right.
I guess I just needed a little confidence here.
Go for it. But I'd wait till September because you really don't want that hot weather
I haven't fared on. I have a scorecard here and it doesn't look too good. So.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Good luck.
Thank you. Okay. Let's go to Champaign then for another caller here. Line two. Hello.
Yes. Hi.
Hi.
I heard you talking to the man with the problem with the bamboo plants earlier. And I'm wondering if the rhizomes or root system for the archangel are as bad. I've been tearing out a lot of archangel and have been planning to just take a pitchfork and to get all the roots that I can. And my question is whether I should also go the route of laying the black plastic down, because I had wanted to plant some hibiscus or clematis in that same area. This week? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, they don't have nearly the big, thick rhizomes that we see with bamboo. It's a much more fibrous root system. It just happens to be everywhere.
Right.
I think my only concern is unfortunately, because it's such a fibrous root system, if you miss some of those, they're going to start popping up in the plants that you plant again.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what unless you really want to do it, you know, this week, obviously, it'd be one of those things, if you want to do it, you'd have to just dig out whatever you can and then hope for the best and then sort of deal with it later. If there's any way you could sort of wait, I think what you might want to think about is that actually archangel would be one that would really do well, as in not do well, by just smothering it with, I think I've talked about the lasagna gardening before, where you actually just smother it with things like you actually put down wet cardboard or wet newspapers, and then you put another layer of, if you have like compost, then you just sort of layer it. And we used to call it sheet composting, but now they call it lasagna gardening. But it's just basically smothering the stuff out. And archangel would do very well under that, as in would not tolerate that well.
Yeah. Okay.
So that would be a good one. But that's another one that takes some time.
Yeah. So you know, should I wait till next year to plant the replacement flower?
Yeah, I personally think I would, because I think it's much harder later on. You know, if those plants are starting to pop up and now you're having to, you know, trying to protect the plants you planted, but yet you're trying to get rid of these. And if they start to get intermingled, the roots get intermingled, it's really hard, I think.
Yeah.
So I would think about right now, just really think about smothering the stuff out, and then come next spring, I think I would go ahead and plant with whatever you're wanting to replace it with.
Okay. And the smothering it out is with the lasagna layering.
Yeah, with that particular
the black plastic.
Right. And because that particular plant doesn't have those thick rhizomes that we see with bamboo. So it's really just the root system itself wouldn't tolerate that nearly as much.
All right. And I wanted to relocate a few hostas and put a rhododendron in.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if I can get a hold of a rhododendron. But with trying to do it this September work.
I think that'll be fine.
If I can get a roto.
Right. Right, and I would just what I mentioned to the couple callers before about, you know, before you move them in September or whatever, I would make sure you water those particular plants now if you haven't had a chance to do that, just because then it'll make it easier to dig. Plus, the plant will be in a lot better shape when you start moving it.
Yeah. So. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you. Sandy Mason is our guest this morning. That's our regular monthly show on lawn and garden care. We'll take some more questions in a moment after a short break. This is Focus.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, breathing life into the history of our nation's musical past through exhibits, guided tours, and performances at the University of Illinois. More information is available and visits can be scheduled at 217-244-9309.
This is Focus, our morning talk show. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. We're here weekday mornings and have 10 different topics in hour number two. Our guest is Carl Lippo. He's an archaeologist at California State University, Long Beach. We'll talk about Easter Island and some new ways of thinking about what that culture was all about and what happened to it. That's in the next hour. Tomorrow morning at 10 is our monthly show on nutrition. Celeste Quinn hosts the program, and her guest will be Sarah Jane Bedwell. She's a registered dietitian and is a nationally known nutrition expert. That is tomorrow at 10 o'clock. And we're here weekday mornings, 10 to noon. You want to check out the schedule, find out what we'll be doing for the rest of the week. And next week, go to our website, will.illinois.edu. That way you can also listen to past programs. In this hour, we're taking questions on lawn and garden care, things that grow in the home landscape. Houseplants are okay, too. Sandy Mason is here. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And we have some more folks here to talk with. Next, somebody in Arcola. How about that? Line number one, Arcola. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I've got a question you've probably heard 100 times, and I don't know that you'll have an answer that's different from anything that I've already read, but I'm hoping. I have a wisteria that just refuses to bloom. And I read that maybe as a last resort to shock the thing, that you just prune it hard. And I'm wondering if you've ever done that or heard that that might be the thing that gets it to bloom. So, if not, if you have any suggestions, I'm open to them. And I'll hang up and listen to the answer.
Don't hang up.
So how long has it been? So how long have you had the plant?
4 years.
4 years.
I got the start from a guy who said that it bloomed all the time for him, and he cut it back, cut it to the ground, and practically tried to kill the thing because he couldn't get it to quit overtaking everything.
Okay. Because it
grows in clay. That's the other thing.
Right.
Or
right.
I'm trying to grow it in clay. I'm sure he had much more fertile soil.
Right. They can take a few years to flower, certainly. And I would say probably more like 5 or 6 years on some of them to go and get them to flower on some of the varieties. And usually it is a matter of they grow kind of similar to grapes in the sense that the flowering wood actually comes off of the wood from the year before, if that makes any sense whatsoever. So you need some of that old wood typically, and then it has way, way, way too much growth for those. So usually doing that, I've had people say that they root prune them. I've tried that. I had one that I did everything to it. I yelled at it. I did everything I possibly could. The stupid thing would not flower, and I waited 8 years for the stupid thing to flower. You can see I'm not bitter or anything about this. so I thought, this is it. I'm tired of this. And so I actually ended up getting rid of it altogether, and I got some of the newer varieties. There's one called Amethyst Falls. There's one called Blue Moon. They're actually flowering in the pot when you buy them.
Oh, wow.
And I have one called Blue Moon that is just, I love it. It's just really a great plant, and it flowers, and I'm just so glad I finally just got rid of the other one. So yours is still a little young, so you might give it a chance to do that. But generally, you know, the heavy pruning, you don't want to cut it all necessarily all the way to the ground, but some heavy pruning I think helps. And you might even try root pruning it, you know, just sticking a shovel in and then just pulling the shovel out. You're not really trying to do anything other than cut the roots. And sometimes that stress supposedly is supposed to help them encourage them to flower.
Make me feel better. At least I feel like I'm getting even.
Yeah, there you go. Or just tell them it's off with its head next year if it doesn't start doing something. So sometimes threats might help.
All right, I'll be a little bit more patient.
Okay.
Right, thank you. And you were the one that gave me a hard time for saying that I spoke nicely to my plants and told them how pretty they were. You're yelling
and
at you. Think, and
know.
You're vicious, and
vicious.
It probably doesn't do any more than it does, you know, than what I do.
But sometimes it just makes you feel better.
Let's
just
yell at him. All right. Charleston, line number two. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a lemon tree that I grew myself from seed, and it has been doing wonderful. It has grown about 5 feet now. I repotted it already. The leaves are huge and shiny, and it's very healthy, and it's doing really well. But it hasn't flowered. So I was wondering if there is something I can do to make it flower, to make it bloom. I want the lemons.
Right. The problem is when we take some of these plants, when we take seeds from a lot of these plants that are actually cross-pollinated, you never quite know what you're going to get. And unfortunately, a lot of times seedlings are very slow to flower. And that's why you'll see a lot of producers, whether apples or whatever, they actually use cuttings and grafts and stuff to get plants into flowering faster. So I'm not sure there's much you can, you know, it's great. It sounds like it's a beautiful houseplant kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. I'm so happy. I just gave it a huge pot plant, and it's really, really nice. I would like to see the flowers. But,
right, absolutely.
I see.
So I think it's one of those things you may have to find that it's going to take a couple of years before it'll actually flower well for you. But obviously you're doing something right if it's growing that well. So I would just give it some time. And I think that probably the fact that it is a seedling, sometimes that does take them longer to produce. And I will tell you, too, you're never quite sure what you're going to get lemon-wise. It's not necessarily going to look at all like the lemon that you get off, you know, get in the grocery store or whatever.
Oh, okay.
So in the future, you might actually, the Meyer lemon is actually one that does much better as an indoor type plant, and you just buy it as a Meyer lemon, and it's really one that flowers quickly. It has small lemons on it, but they really, if you give it some, you know, plenty of light, you have hopefully, you know, a greenhouse, sunroom, something like that where you get plenty of light, they actually can produce lemons indoors.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Okay, good luck.
Very good, thank you. To another caller here, and that would be line number three, and is someone in Champaign here. Hello.
Yeah, an extension on the lawn care thing. I see a lot of commercial contract mowing people contract mow by the month, not by the growth of the lawn. So in summertime, you have mowers, huge mowers, mowing lawns, that have nothing to mow except one or two sticks.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sending up a dust cloud, like giving everybody allergies. And I wish people who do contract mowing would arrange for mowing by the growth. In spring, rain and growth. In summer, no growth. And fall, growth.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't tend to do that. We tend
right.
to, and people get very irate if you accost them and say, "Excuse me, but why are you mowing?" Well, I have a contract for doing it by a month, and I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Mind your own business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I understand exactly what you're saying. It is one of those things where it's sometimes just business wise, that's the way it's done. Or, you know, I know in Florida they actually kind of have the set. amount of money through the month, you know, no matter what time of year it is, and you're just going to be mowing more in the spring and fall, and they know that, and, you know, it just kind of works its way out. So that is one of those things that is, obviously, it's a different business model maybe than what traditionally people think.
So. Well, I don't know if there's any possibility if you're contracting for one of those services, right in the outset, say, okay, well, what's the policy here? Because certainly, I don't know when the last time I cut my grass was, but it's been a while, and there's no need because it's not
growing.
Yeah,
you really don't need to, right.
Yeah.
And it's actually better to let it, you know, go a little longer, you know, when it's going through these really difficult times. So I think it is one. I mean, it's a good point. I mean, I think we always have to think, why am I mowing, period? You know, why am I mowing this and what's happening? Right. And there certainly are some, I should say, sometimes there are some reasons to mow in that people have areas maybe along a street or something where they don't want the woody plants coming in. As in things like mulberries will come in, honeysuckle will come in. There's a lot of woody plants that will take over those grassy areas. So sometimes they have to mow once a year, you know, to at least sort of keep down that woody stuff so you don't start having trees and stuff that are going to block vision and those kind of things. So, but obviously, you know, how often is another issue.
Yeah. All right. Well, again, thanks to the call. Let's go on to Belgium, line number 4. Hello.
Hello, and good morning to you both today. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I got a question. I hope you can answer it. Several years ago, I went someplace and got one of these little short cactuses. You know, you can buy them in a little pot, and they look so cute. Well, this little cactus now is pretty close to 6 foot tall.
Oh, my gosh.
Whoa.
Unfortunately, it has developed a nasty little rot at the top.
Oh.
And so I think it's on its way to dying.
Yeah.
And can you cut them off and transplant them? Can you do anything at all with them?
Wow. I don't know. So it's just at the top where it seems like it's kind of dying?
Yeah. Yeah, it turned black, and it's just, it's like an ulcer. It just keeps creeping down it.
Yeah. I think they do get some, you know, obviously some disease kind of issues for that. I guess what I would wonder if maybe you can do a little surgery and just remove that area that appears to be not doing so well and tears the rotting, just sort of get it out of there. As long as the rot's not at the base, I would think it would tolerate it quite well. It's going to look funny.
Yeah.
You know, it's never going to be that sort of perfect shape that maybe you had before.
Well, I don't know if you've ever grown a cactus before, but they never have perfect shapes. You know, they get
they
all
kind get
of
their own
nerdly shapes, and they get bigger and smaller and squish up.
Right. And who's going to argue with a cactus?
Exactly. You know? Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you. We have, I guess about 7-8 minutes left in this hour of Focus. And our guest is Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension, Champaign County. And once a month on Tuesday, she's here and we take questions on lawn and garden care. So if we can help you out, got some kind of problem, you need some advice, 333-9455 is the number for Champaign Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. And will-talk@illinois.edu. That's the email. Is there, would you want to mention, I see you have a flyer here for the some stuff going on there at the Idea Garden?
Absolutely. The Idea Garden, we try to have garden chats periodically, and we have a couple that are coming up that I think people might be interested in. Certainly on August 20th, we had one of our master gardeners, Phyllis Williams, who takes care of the fruit area that we have there, is going to be talking about small fruits. So that's things like strawberries and raspberries and blackberries. And I know these days people are more interested in maybe growing some of these things on their own, but there are a few things to keep in mind. And they've done a super job at the Idea Garden on actually growing grapes and all kinds of things. So that's a really good opportunity. That's August 20th, and it's a Saturday at 11 o'clock. And then on September 10th, I know we've talked about a little bit about this before, but September 10th is Winter Gardening and the Low Hoop Tunnel Project, which I know sounds kind of linear.
The
like,
low
what is that?
Hoop Tunnel.
Yeah, this is actually a really neat thing that's getting to be more and more popular within horticulture and commercial as well as home horticulture, is this idea of having these sort of plastic hoops, and they can be low so you don't walk through them, or high tunnels as you would walk through. And these are actually to extend the season. And they just started, the Master Gardeners just started this last year and through the wintertime. And it's amazing, the spinach, kale stuff, the stuff that will survive. There's no heat, of course, in these things. But they survive that just by having that little bit of plastic kind of thing. But there are a few things to keep in mind, obviously. And so they're going to talk about John Jones and Tom Seals, a couple of our master gardeners that have been doing this. They're going to be talking about that on September 10th at 11 a.m. at the Idea Garden. So, and people don't have to register, just wander over and do that. I also want to mention the Pollinatarium is also having their regular Sunday type programs, and they have one coming up this Sunday. And Dr. Gene Robinson is going to be talking about bees through the eyes of a fourth grader. So sort of just, I think just, you know, we hear a lot about, you know, problems with bees these days, but sort of thinking through, you know, what they are and how they live. And I think that's really going to be a good one, too. And if people have never been to the Pollinatarium, it's a great place. I mean, it's really interesting. It's the only freestanding science center dedicated to pollinators. And so that's everything from bees to butterflies to hummingbirds, so you name it. So yeah. And they have a nice native garden there as well. So it's really a good opportunity. And it's just off of Windsor Road, just east. The road is just east of Lincoln Avenue and then off of Windsor Road. Yeah. So there is a sign out there.
If you're on Windsor Road and you're going west, it's right off, and there is a sign, so it's your right to turn off, and it's just maybe about two city blocks west of Race.
Yes, it's west of Race, east of Lincoln.
Yes. Okay. Well, you know, May is going to be here tomorrow. May Barenboim's
going to
be here
tomorrow. Oh, good. I'm sure she'll probably talk about the Pollinatarium then. Yeah. Oh, good.
All right. Okay. Caller here in southern Champaign County. Let's talk with them. Line number one. Hello.
Hi. Good morning, y'all. Sandy, I just want to give you a follow-up on a question I had for you a while back, and it's kind of funny. While I was waiting, you brought up the subject of bees, and that is exactly what I was calling about. You give me a reference phone number. You know how bees, when they break a hive off because it gets too large, they send scouts out to find a new place, and then they come back, and if it's real far, they have a stopover place. Well, I had told you that I had bees moving into that tree, and I was watching them. And it turned out that was just their stopover place for the day and night.
Oh, and then they left?
They moved
on. Oh,
well,
then
that's
good.
Didn't have to do anything.
Oh, well, that's good. So maybe that's a good thing to let people know then. I should tell people that they should just give them a day or so. Maybe they're just hanging out, relaxing, you know, little truck stop.
Sometimes they'll fly miles and they have to take a break. You know, scouts
will go a long way
until they find a new home.
Oh, well, good.
When the hive splits off. So they have to take a break and then fly on from there. So...
Even bees need a break.
Yeah, they just use that tree outside my door as a motel for the day. And they head it on about
the Super 8, so to speak. Good. Well, I'm glad you said something about that. That's really good. I should let people know when they call in they're concerned about bees.
Yeah, and I appreciate the phone number, but I just watched them for a while, and I didn't even have to call the bee guy.
So, good.
Anyways, thank you very much
good.
For that information.
Yeah.
You all have a great day.
Thanks for letting me know about that.
Well, I don't know if this was one of these cases where someone called in and they had some bees and they were in a place where it was a kind of a problem and they didn't want to kill them. Right. And that it is true that there are sometimes if there are people who do beekeeping in the area where you are that and they know what they're doing, they can actually come and get the bees and take them away because, you know, that's good for them to get the bees. And we need to take care of the bees.
Yeah.
We would be in a world of hurt if we didn't have any bees.
Yeah. So if you could think of all the things that get pollinated from apples, peaches, cherries, just think of all the things we'd have to do without if we didn't have pollinators out there.
Yeah. Be good to your bees.
Be good to your bees.
All right. We have a couple minutes left again. Somebody calling back. I think we talked earlier in Summer Township here on line number two. Hello.
Yeah, hello there.
Hi.
Just about the fellow wanting to get rid of bamboo.
Oh, right.
You rent a small backhoe. Okay, when you say you've got a patch of bamboo, that could be quite a bit of area.
And
you just
you're right.
The roots don't go any more than 6 or 8 inches down at the most. Just gouge up everything, run through it with a pitchfork, and then level it again.
Yeah. I mean, bottom line is that's probably what's going to need to be done. Yeah.
Because chemically killing is going to, if you use enough to kill them, their roots, you're not going to like the result.
You just have to be persistent. One application wouldn't do it, more than likely. But, that's a good, I mean, the bottom line is when you get things with those really big root systems, you're absolutely right.
The root system's so big, you just want to get rid of it.
Yeah, right, right. It's a good point. Good point.
All right, very
just
good.
Just ran a backup.
Thank you. And again, here we have an email from somebody who heard the earlier call. It was the woman in Downs who was talking about the cornflowers that being nipped off.
Mm-hmm.
She said, I've seen birds, grackles, I think, wantonly, I like that word, wantonly snipping off my tulips, just stalking down the row and leaving the blooms lying in their wake. Maybe they can do it on the wing, too, and maybe the stems of coneflowers and similar plants are too tough for them to snip clear through.
Huh. See, I'm thinking the camera. I'm still thinking we need a camera.
Yeah.
I think this almost sounds like it's one of the things that happens very quickly, and unless you're really watching it. Yeah. I don't know. That's interesting.
Okay.
Yeah,
well, that's
the stems are pretty darn tough on coneflowers and stuff.
Now, why would a bird snip off the? I've seen. In my yard, I've seen squirrels eat them before they open up.
Yeah, yeah.
They must be really nice and tender and succulent, as I've seen them just stand up on their hind legs, reach up with their forepaws, and bend it down
so they
so can
get,
they get at it. Oh, yes,
man.
Yes.
Yeah, and I've certainly seen rabbits go
22.
Through.
22.
Yeah.
And they're good eating, too. One more call. We'll try in Urbana, line 3. Hello.
I've got two quick questions about trees. I have a blue spruce that was planted from a Christmas tree. It's about 60 feet tall, very healthy, but the branches, lower ones, are taking over my yard, and the top ones are overhanging a neighbor's house. And I've read not to trim them, but then others say you can trim them any time, so I'm not sure what to do.
You're trying to make the branches shorter?
Yeah, the lower branches actually, you know, come out into my yard, and I'd like to have a patio area. So if I remove them, I'd remove a couple of the lower branches and then to trim back the top so they don't overhang a neighbor's yard.
Well, you certainly can remove the lower branches if you want to. You know, typically we like blue spruce because they keep their lower branches throughout their lifetime for the most part.
Right.
So we kind of like that. But you're not going to hurt it really by taking those lower branches out. If you're talking about removing the whole branch on the bottom, and that's fine. You're just going to open it up, and that's fine. That's not a huge issue for those.
Any time of year?
I you know, at this point, because it's so hot and dry, I think I would probably wait. Again, we're sort of back into that sort of September or in the spring or something along those lines. And then the other ones, you certainly can cut them back to some extent. It's hard with spruces, but sometimes you can cut them back so that there's another fork, you know, where you've seen another set of branches coming out. And sometimes you can remove that and you maintain the natural shape of the plant. So I think the biggest thing with pruning those is that you do it branch by branch and try to maintain the natural shape of the plant.
All right. And then one other quick question. I have two maples, and the squirrels are getting into knots, I guess, one of them where they may be living. The other, it looks like that same phenomenon is starting. Could I put a wire mesh over those or any way to, or what's the best route to go?
And you just don't want the squirrels there because you just don't want squirrels?
Yeah.
Because they're not hurting they're not hurting the tree at all. Obviously.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought they were.
No. They're not hurting the tree, and that's just a natural. Maples, as they age naturally, get these natural openings, and squirrels love them. Those are like the, you know, prime territory. So
I'm going to jump in here and say that's all the time we have, and Sandy will be back again next month to take questions. Also, tune in for Mid-American Gardener Thursday nights at 7 on WILL-TV for more gardening information. Hey, thanks very much for being
Thank
here.
Thank you.